Hello dudes, dudettes, dude parents and doodlers, and welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and on this week's show, we'll meet Erlen Doy, king of convenience and whitest boy alive, to talk electronic versus analogue and Berlin versus Britain. We'll have the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, UGK and KIG in an all-male singles club. Grrr. We drag back the feature with no name and all your faceback isms too, but first, a quick tour of the invisible. London town, seemed to know herself. She had a home and friends who cared. Approval was the God to which she now. That was London Girl by The Invisible, a new band from our estimable capital who appear to be too clever for their own good, which is just how we like them on this pod. To my right, although seeing as we're sitting on a circular table, it's also my left, I have a man about town, Mr. Tim Jones. Tim, you're not rosy.
I might be. I might just be wearing different clothes today.
No, I investigated. I had a little grope earlier on. You're not. You interviewed The Invisible for us. Now, for listeners who haven't heard them before, how would you describe them?
Well, they get compared to a lot of sort of inventive guitar bands. So some people say UK's TV on the radio. Other people compare them to Radiohead. So basically, they take guitars and make pop music, but pop music that's quite interesting and weird as well. They've also kind of worked with Matthew Herbert. He's put out their new record on his label, Accidental. He's kind of into experimental pop and all that sort of stuff. So I thought, because they're such an experimental band, I'd ask them if they actually even consider themselves to be a sort of traditional guitar band.
There are guitars in the band, but I don't think I'd feel comfortable with being described as a guitar band.
Despite being I love the guitar. Axemen of London.
I do love the axe, and I love the possibilities that six-stringed instrument represents, but there's so much live music happening and everybody's in a band. It's like everybody I meet is in a band and doing something, and guitars seem to play a big part of that, and I think they always will, because just it's the nature of the instrument. It's easy to pick up and get going with and stuff, and I'd never want to sort of be opposed to that kind of ideal, but I definitely understand just that notion of things kind of getting a bit tired, and I think it's a natural cycle, do you know what I mean? I think that's sort of part of any sort of creative journey and creative process or sort of enterprise, you know. We get into kind of fads and fashions and then we get bored of them and have to go somewhere else, and that seems pretty healthy. So I think it's good that stuff's being questioned, you know.
Do you really have to put an effort in to make sure that you are coming up with something fresh and it's not in too directly linked to something from the past?
Well, it goes through my mind, definitely. But I think thinking in stylistic terms can be dangerous, sort of unfulfilling and misrepresenting in a way. So I think trying to steer clear of that, just try and let the music come out, is really important, and something that we try and do. Not be too worried about whether it sounds like this or that.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I'm a really strong believer in the idea that if you're committed to sort of being yourself and reflecting the things that you love, kind of, you know, as filtered through your like own perception and experience, then you will be original, because there's certainly no one like me around, so I'm just gonna, and that's probably a good thing, you know. So just by virtue of that, it will be unique, and I think that's something that, you know, when I think of the music that really inspires me, it retains that quality. There's a sense that
complete
that
character, yeah, uniqueness, yeah.
His honesty was concentric. Today he lives at the periphery. Spin that governed his world became the force that governed him. His need for affirmation kept on spinning him. Spin that governed his world became a raging force within him.
I like the idea of, you know, recording drums in a field.
Yeah, Matt, I think Matthew was, he managed to catch some dogs barking, like, from the neighbouring house.
That was actually me singing.
Oh, was that you? Oh, right.
There was some great things. Like, for me, when I listened back to it, there's all these things kind of come back, like the sound of like Matthew walking on some leaves outside the studio, or like Tom Skinner playing a lampshade in a bookcase on one of the tracks, or realizing that we wanted a kind of bell-like sound and finding this butler's bell and playing that and making that kind of work, or like finding like a hunting horn that was in this medieval cottage that we were staying in while we were recording, and incorporating that into the tracks. You know, it was just a really nice to sort of make a record and for it to feel like there aren't really any limits in terms of like what you can use and, you know, what's legitimate to use to kind of make a sound. This also just makes it quite exciting to not like just go into a studio and like, as you say, sort of bosh songs out. You know, it's like obviously great things can happen when you do that, but I think it's really exciting when the possibilities are sort of broader. Just really interesting to watch what Matt does with sound and how he treats it and what it becomes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, one of my favorite things was just how he made like these synthesizers out of my voice, basically, you know, and just that, you know, sort of playing chords and going, wow, that's like my voice and like my breath kind of making that sound, and no one's ever going to make that sound again, you know.
The squeaky door was really...
Yeah, the squeaky moment. Door, the laughing squeaky door.
I never thought that
door.
Would make the final...
So whereabouts does that turn up? Have I missed that? Or
it's at the beginning of Jacob and the Angel.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's like a door slam, and then but the door comes back.
The door laughs as it opens.
That was Tim and The Invisible, and we'll have a live track from the band at the end of this show. The debut album is also out right now. Okay, I've got a tingle in my dingle, which can only mean an all-male singles club. Joining me and Tim is Alex Needham, Guardian Culture Tsar, which means you would have your head lopped off in the event of a revolution.
I'm sure it's coming any day now.
How are you? You good?
I'm good, thank you. You've got a bit of a cold.
Yeah, haven't we all, actually? And yes, indeed, Rosie not being here through illness herself. Thank you for coming in at such short notice to fill in for said Rosie and for making this pod a little funky. For here is KIG with Heads, Shoulders, Knees and Toes.
I'm bubbly, bubbly. I'm bubbly, bubbly. Ladies and fellas too. It's the funky sounds of the funky...
Yo! Ladies, let me see you get down low. Ladies, let me see you get down low. Ladies, let me see you get down low. With the head, shoulders, knees and toes. Man, them, let me see you keep it show. Man, them, let me see you keep it show. Man, them, let me see you keep it show. With the head, shoulders, knees and toes.
Head, shoulders, knees and toes. Head, shoulders, knees and toes. Bust the head, shoulders, knees and toes.
I wanna see them
ladies. Let me see you go down low.
That's Head, Shoulders, Knees and Toes by KIG. KIG is the crew, DJ Dexter is the producer of this funky underground smash that's heading overground quicker than a womble fleeing the attentions of Uncle Bulgaria. Funky is not to be confused with funky house, even though it is funky house music. Unlike its disco derivative namesake, funky is a little more eclectic in its influences, taking in grime, bassline and even afrobeat. It also rips off children's nursery rhymes too. Alex, your choice.
Well, I'm sure this is probably on the right wing of funky, but I became sort of intrigued by this kind of music at the end of last year when I wrote a piece about dubstep for an American magazine, and basically all the dubstep producers I interviewed were saying, why are you writing about dubstep? You know, you should be writing about this new kind of music called funky. And as I said, I confused it with funky house, which is obviously one of the worst genres ever. But this is kind of the latest mutation of sort of London-based underground black music. This record, obviously, it's got the inevitable kind of YouTube-made video, which is just loads of people doing the dance in Oxford Circus, which is very sort of stupid. But I don't know, I just like the kind of whole sort of grassroots nature of it, the fact that it's got a stupid dance, and it's just, you know, I like the fact it's just the latest new way of kind of shaking your bits around in a stupid way.
I wondered why they filmed it in Oxford Circus as well. Is they like on their way to Topshop or something and then get the cameras out? There's obviously lots to recommend this track in terms of youth culture, Tim Jones. Is there anything to recommend it musically?
To me, it's very opportunistic. I mean, the fact he's got a dance craze and he keeps saying bubbly, bubbly, it's kind of like they've looked at wearing my Rolex and thought, how can we score a big hit as quickly as possible? I think the official video has the start, says get ready for the new dance craze or something similar.
I do notice it's popped up on the All Around the World blog, All Around the World being that dance label that's responsible for Scooter and all the big chart, the industrial dance smashes.
That's right, and Donk as well. Donk as well.
Exactly. I wonder whether it might actually get a big patched up release eventually. I mean, the one thing you've got to say about it, though, it is, unlike a lot of other kind of young urban music genres, it's thoroughly upbeat. It's just mess around. It's not got any kind of dark edges around it.
Well, I think that might be a reaction to dubstep, actually, which is kind of perceived as very male. You know, you go out, wear what you like, the blokes in it are quite scruffy, whereas I think funky is maybe a bit more upscale, a bit more glamorous, not that you'd know it from the video, and maybe a bit more female-friendly as well.
Well, we had a blog on that the other day, actually, the big crossover between funky and dubstep, and they were saying that the wardrobe wars is what might stop them actually being able to merge properly. Real dubstep fans aren't going to be prepared to put on, you know, their shirt and their shoes and go to a proper funky night.
Fantastic. Information Overload. Head, Shoulders, Etc. is out on KIG Mile Records on March the 23rd, and the dance is sweeping the nation as we speak. Next up on Singles Club, it's the Yeah Yeah Yeahs with Heads Will Roll. That's Heads Will Roll by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. The Yeah Yeah Yeahs, 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 Yeahs are Karen O, Nick Zinner and Brian Chase. A band with punk and garage roots, they went large with their debut album, Fever to Tell, and despite their second album, Show Your Bones, faring less well, they still have a large following. Whether this is due to the money of Interscope Records, the unique style of Ms. O, or the fact that they really actually have enduring tunes, we shall leave up to you. Or maybe Mr. Tim Jones, whose choice this is this week.
It's all down to me, whether this succeeds or not.
Yes.
There's quite a few tracks that have been leaked from this new Yeah Yeahs album, and I think they're actually releasing their album early because of it. They seem to have taken a very dance direction. This is, you know, if you can't write a good song, you might as well rip off a really good song, and that's what this has done. It's basically taken the music from Public Image Limited's This Is Not a Love Song and just yelped a bit over it, but I think it's brilliant. I think it shouldn't work because I think Nick Zinner is kind of the genius in the band with his guitar work and stuff, and, you know, that's really not there anymore. But it's just a brilliant party record, really.
Alex, what's the difference between this and Lady Gaga?
I prefer Lady Gaga. I don't like this record at all, actually. I think it's really badly produced is one surprising thing about it. And also, it's been done to death. An indie band goes dance by putting a kind of a cheap keyboard sound over the top of it. I mean, the records that they're sort of ripping off, obviously that Pill one, but Giorgio Moroder they've talked about as well, were absolutely at the sonic cutting edge of their time. And it just seems really lazy to me to kind of scale back what they are, which is a great kind of garage rock group, and overlay something which is really kind of thin and cheap.
Because I think her voice really suits this kind of song. That's what I guess I like about it, the fact that her whole kind of persona, she seems to be, she kind of contorts her body around on stage and she seems to be looking for some kind of release and euphoria. And I think the fact that they've gone dance is quite interesting because it matches that.
But she's also quite passionate though and quite twisted in her emotions, whereas this is quite plain and you say dance floor euphoric almost. I'd say it's an odd mix. Actually, Alex, we'll follow you up on the point you made about the production. Why specifically is it? Do you think it's bad?
I just think that with a dance record, you need something that's got loads of oomph and is kind of all enveloping. They've kind of taken away the rockness of it. And the keyboards sound very kind of thin and cheap. I don't think her voice sounds that amazing on it. And the sort of, you know, like a DFA record, for instance, which I think has probably inspired this change in direction. You know, they sound really great. There's something interesting happening in them. And they've got enough oomph to actually make you dance. indie kids will like this because they don't know any better, but it's not really. But if you played it, if you sort of played it in a proper club, I think its limitations would be obvious.
It's also quite familiar from the last Killers, the latest Killers album as well. This, like you say, it's not as if there aren't other indie bands doing this, so even within in the indie fraternity, it might not sound that original.
Well, actually, Stuart Price, who did the Killers' last record, I think is a really good record producer, and their records do sound good on a big sound system, even their old indie ones did. I just find it weird and surprising that they've gone in this direction, and also I don't like the way that, because it's a dance record, they kind of have meaningless lyrics. I always admired the Yeah's lyrics from Bang, the first single, onwards, and I don't know, it seems a bit obvious and also kind of cheap.
I don't know, I like the idea of a disco revolution with Heads Will Roll on the floor. Tim, you got one last chance to defend the record to the hilt.
I feel beaten down.
No, come on. It's only Alex. It's only one man.
Exactly. What do I know?
Well, I would say that as a Yeah's fan, you don't necessarily approach them with what's going to sound good in a great sound system and stuff. I don't really think that's what they've ever been going for. And I think with so many bands going stadium, your Razorlights and your Killers, who we've talked about, I think it's quite good that they want to make things sound a bit cheaper.
Fair point, well made. Okay, it's Blit, the third album from the Yeah's will be out in April. Finally, this week it's UGK and Game Being Good to Me. Where you go, big body guards when you come for the show. They already know you got shit on your name. Nigga, you a pussy, they gon' take your chain. Take your PC, wings and watts. You play rich, boy, you need to stop. Dissing nobody, no particular name. The shoe fit, nigga, get the fuck up out the game, little bitch. You lost your spot when you went pop, CD flop, you ain't hot. That was UGK with Game Being Good to Me. UGK were a rap band from Texas, fated for the realness of their gangster music, but not really listened to by all that many people. Then, one half of the group, Pimp C, was imprisoned on gun charges. This sparked great publicity. 2 years after he was released, Pimp C died in his sleep. This created even more publicity and great anticipation for their final album, For Life, from which this track is taken. Okay, my choice. I'm going to say the three things what are good about this is the guitar. It's like Tarantino-esque, but also Leone, and it makes me think of them performing the raps wearing ponchos and with cigars in their mouths. I like the Outkast-ish vocals, or Curtis Mayfield to be precise. They've worked with Outkast before on their biggest hit to date, International Players Anthem, and I think that adds a little bit. But my favourite thing about UGK is Bun B, the remaining rapper. I love his voice. It's just kind of, for me, the epitome of that whole Dirty South sound. It's got grit and these really elongated vowel sounds. And I got a suspicion this would probably be the best track on their last album, but I do like it a lot. Tim.
Can I quote a lyric?
Yes.
It says, first album went platinum, now you can't go gold. Get disrespected everywhere you go.
Yeah.
I think more hip-hop bands should be writing about Johnny Burrell. Now, I agree with the things you said about the guitar and the Curtis Mayfield kind of vocals. It doesn't sound wholly original to me, but I quite like the lyrics are kind of, you know, it's like a long-term diss, isn't it? It's like saying, you know, you've been there, but you've faded. Again.
That's it. I mean, I think this is it does have that tone of tying their career in a bow a little bit, which I'm not sure they were inevitably planning on doing before Pimp C passed away, but it does have that air. And
Is it not fair to say that the game hasn't been that good to them, though?
Well, it hasn't been that good to them up until all this controversy. And they did get their Grammy nomination. They have a lot of recognition and have probably made a lot of money through guest appearances.
I was thinking more from Pimp C's perspective after being in jail and then dying.
Well, yes, he'll be remembered in heaven.
It's a very strange rock death he had, isn't it? He died from an overdose of cough syrup.
A reaction to a sleep condition.
It reminds me a bit of when Robbie Williams went into rehab for drinking too much Red Bull.
But you think there's something euphemistical about it? No, I think it was proven to be the case. What about the track, though, as opposed to the legend?
Yeah, I did like it. I mean, the lyrics, is it a true story? The first thing seems to be aimed at a rival rapper, but then it goes into this whole kind of long sort of gangster prison thing about someone who is a long, complicated, involved story about someone who's betrayed somebody else. Then there's a whole kind of plea bargaining thing, which obviously went wrong. So, yeah, I mean, I liked how... how kind of painterly and exact it was in what it set out to do. And the twangy guitar is kind of a gothic country sort of atmosphere, which I suppose ties back into their southernness.
Yeah, gothic country, not a bad description at all there, and probably best note to leave that track on. Okay, that is UGK with Game Being Good to Me, and the final album, Forever, is due for release on March the 31st, but you can hear it now on their MySpace. It wouldn't be the web without a little interaction from you, the user, and it wouldn't be the Guardian without reacting really slowly. So here's some of your thoughts on last week's singles. EJD said of Jonathan Jeremiah, made me think of Terry Callier, which can't be a bad thing. Portishead said, is it just me, or does J. Jeremiah sound really like Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords? I'll never be able to take him seriously. And this was a comment after actually he said he'd liked him, so I'm not sure where Portishead quite stands. But I would say that Jermaine sings a lot deeper than J. Jeremiah. And while we're on the subject of Flight of the Conchords, I'd like to recommend to you all the video of Brett doing Korean karaoke, which is currently doing the rounds. It's from the As Yet Unscreened in the UK second season, and it is well funny.
Well, here's a dissenting voice on Jonathan Jeremiah. Japantha said, as for Jonathan Jeremiah, well, I am a reasonable, calm and non-judgmental person in normal circumstances, and I like a bit of acoustic-y folk. But as soon as the vocals kicked in on that clip that was played, a completely irrational hatred and ire erupted inside of me. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Don't you like it when the kind of the calm, measured responses come on the blog? Okay, that's it from your feedback on this week's singles, but here's a montage of other music that's out, available to buy next week. Beyoncé, Halo. The Long Lost, A Miss. Piece of cake, my mistake. Oasis, Falling Down. Nauru, In for the Kill. We can fight our desires. Ooh, but when we start making fires, we can... Thanks to Alex for coming in to join us for Singles Club today.
Thanks very much.
The usual erudition.
Cheers. That's not something that's often said to me.
No, well, I'll make sure I say it again. Keep you coming back. Next on Music Weekly, though, it's time for your boy, Erland Oy. Can you keep a secret? Honestly, no. If I know who could start. That was Keep a Secret by Whitest Boy Alive, aka Erland Oy. Depending on your age and your inclination for lo-fi acousticism, you may remember Norwegian Erland Oy as one half of Kings of Convenience. If you're more electronically inclined, you may know him as Berlin resident and DJ. And if you were acoustic, then bought synthesizers, but then threw out your synthesizers to buy guitars, you might be a fan of the Whitest Boy Alive, Erland's latest project. Their second album, Rules, which came out this week, is electropop without the electro, but has an ease about it that suggests Oy has been umbilically attached to a sequencer. He's a jack of all genres, that's for sure, and when I met him in London recently, I asked him whether there was any kind of record he couldn't make.
I couldn't really do a sexually pervert rap record, because the people who like the dreamier, romantic things that I've done would feel that it ruins my previous output. It ruins the previous idea of who I am as a musician.
And do you feel you owe it to those people to maintain that previous image?
I do feel a certain obligation to not totally ruin their enjoyment of the music I've previously put out. In the same way that someone who put out something very good at some point kind of shouldn't put out something which is remarkably less good, because it would soil the statement of the first very good output.
This is quite interesting because, I mean, let's say, for example, that the Kings of Convenience were very good. And you're saying that perhaps the sexually perverted rap album would be conceived of by your fan and by the fans of the Kings of Convenience as being not very good. But in your mind, as the artist, as the musician, you might think this is the best sexually perverted rap record I could possibly make. So it's subjective.
It's subjective. And it is, of course, possible. But that what I really was sent to Earth to do was to make a sexually perverted rap record. It would be shame if the best sexually perverted rap record in the world would not be released because the maker would be afraid to antagonize earlier fans.
Talking about the music on this album, could you describe it musically?
Rules, the album, is derived from the members of the Whitest Boy Alive's love for dance music. Obviously, dance music is quite a wide term, particularly our love for certain type of house music, the earlier kind. Also a little bit the early 90s kind of late night house music. The song Time Bomb is again very inspired by techno. I guess this is definitely our live band playing techno song. Vocals are two syllables, and the guitar work is not really inspired by any particular guitar player or any guitar. It's basically someone who's playing guitar trying to play keyboard patterns. Started by covering songs from the 80s and 90s that were house and techno style songs. And from that cover version, we would pick out a certain groove, a certain part where we feel this is something we can take and make our own. We can develop this into something else. I would always be looking for something to play on guitar that would fit in with a house and techno song arrangement. Something with a little bit of energy. At the same time, as I do like Dire Straits. I think it's quite endearing. Humans try to imitate machines. There's some cute love in there. Our drummer, it's quite counterintuitive for our drummer to play as sparse as he's doing. But he's doing it for the love of the members of our band. As we know that we prefer it when we do it. But also because he loves house music. And he likes the idea that his playing is making people dance. And he understands that if he would play very much more interesting, the people might stop dancing and just look at him instead. And that's not really what we aim to do.
He doesn't have a say in that at all. Does he not feel his art is being compromised at any point?
I think we all in this band feels that our art does being compromised at some point. There has been discussions. There has been arguments. But that is what creating a band is. You have to find common ground. And as long as you have 400 people applauding you for doing this and smiling, the compromises feels very worthwhile.
Lyrically, this album sounds a lot to me like you are giving advice to someone. I think a woman. Certainly, there is enough references to women in there to make me think that that's what's going on. Is that the case? There's lots of maxims, observations about human behaviour, particularly human behaviour in relationships. I was wondering whether you lyrically are talking about addressing the concept of rules as well as in the composition of your music.
Very excited to hear your idea of what it is that I do lyrically, because not many people comment much about it. Yeah, I guess I do. I am giving advice to someone. That is kind of what I'm doing. I like that. Any ounces of doubt, don't show them. In this ancient game where players never lose. I do feel the Whitest Boy alive and other things I've been doing has had to do an awful lot of pioneering and an awful lot of trial and error to get to where we've come today. And it would have been great to have some of that knowledge beforehand, because things would have happened a lot quicker. For example, in Berlin, where we are based, The White Is Boy Alive, there were not really anyone else doing the mix of, you know, live guitar, indie pop music mixed with electronic dance music. Stranger, you might think there might be a lot, but there are, the two scenes are completely segregated. And the guitar indie pop scene in Berlin has always been very bad. Not very good clubs, not very high level of artfulness. There are good bands, there are good German bands who sing and who have a good sound production aesthetic. But we really had to figure it out for ourselves. And of course, if we've been based in New York, there would be all those DFA guys that you could have kind of asked for advice. That would have been nice. They just weren't around, were they? So, yeah, we had to learn a lot of stuff from ourselves. But I think we all really, 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 really enjoy that, though. Our aim is always to increase as slow as possible, to have to be upwardly mobile, but only barely going upwards, sustainably. And if you reach the top with your first record as a band, there is only one way to go down. And this enormous pressure to keep up a success, it's just not very fun. It's so much more to constantly grow a little bit. And that's what we try to do. We try to enjoy every step of the stair.
Do you feel at some points then you'll have to deny yourself things? If, for example, the Philips LCD television comes to you and offer, or maybe it was Sony, I think it was Jose Gonzalez, and offers you a big advertising contract which would enable you to buy a beach house in Mexico, would you feel that you would have to turn that down because it would put you in a position in future where you would not be able to keep on growing step by step?
I think then what would happen would that we would do the commercial, we would play for 3,000-4,000 people every night, and then I would start making another project, a different project, where I can go back to scratch again and start with a slow build, because I just wouldn't enjoy it as much. It would be out of my hands. It would just be a thing that wasn't really me. I wouldn't be able to take it in. 4,000 people, yeah. But somehow, at a certain number, it just becomes a mass. It doesn't become individuals.
Was Erland Oy, The Whitest Boy Alive, and the album Rules is out now. Okay, you missed it. You asked for it back. But little did you know that when the feature with No Name returned, it will be me banging on about some obscure rap act. Anyway, here it is, FWNN on Nice and Smooth.
Sometimes I rhyme slower, sometimes I rhyme quick. I'm sweeter and thicker than a Chico stick. Here's an ice cream cone, honey, take a lick. I'll go to Bay Plaza and catch a flick. Want my Timberland boots so I can stop the ticks. Scandalous, get a whiff of this mist. Just left the yard, boy, now I'm blessed. I feel good, per se, good state of mind. Drive a red Sterling and the seats recline.
Hip-hop is dead. No, it isn't. It's alive. It's in bad health. It's in rude health. It's just rude. These last couple of years, there's been a lot of chat about rap and the state it's in. It seems that the content of guns and jewels and booze and cash might just have lost its luster. There was once another type of hip-hop, though. It wasn't alternative backpacker stuff, neither. It was just silly and funny and in its own way pretty clever. It was practiced by Biz Markie, Heavy D, Grand Poobah and others. But there was no one better at it than Nice and Smooth. Craig Mays and Daryl Barnes met at block parties in Harlem and the Bronx, proper old school style. But their rhymes and their music were always a little off-kilter and, crucially, a bit funny. Greg Nice was the fast-pitched one with the free association lyrics. Smooth B, the intellectual lover with the polysyllabic vocabulary. Greg would always go first. I can get mellow, relax and let my girl play the cello. Hello, I hate jello. Smooth went second. And together, they fitted like a jam sandwich.
Smooth B is gonna make it real funky for you. Funky for you.
Snoopy, notorious. Glorious, knowledge is infinite. I live in a fortress. I'm so astronomical, yet on a physical plane. My body's just a shell, and control is my brain. I strain to gain spirituality, so I can finally be in unity, harmony with the all I see. Supreme being.
The first three albums all went gold, which for the late 80s or early 90s was good going for a hip hop act. But as rap went mainstream, so being silly went out the window. Greg Nice was reduced to being a hype man on other people's tracks, most notably with the Beatnuts, most recently with mediocre R&B name O'Neill McKnight. Smooth B disappeared altogether, the only sign he had ever existed being that Loverman parody on The Onion. Who knows though, the tide may soon be changing. Lil Wayne likes his stupid puns and can border on the loopy, while white hip-hop hope Asher Roth is spouting dexterous party lyrics like it's 89 all over again. Perhaps someone will get Smooth B out of retirement. Offer him a guest verse. That's the feature with No Name, and because we've piled in so much this week, we're going to rattle through stuff. Tim, why don't you read out our Facebook friends?
Our new Facebook friends are Marcus Rees, Timothy Moore, Rob Ledger, We Are Twisted Licks, Helen Gribben and Coke Chirayaga, Will Emsworth, Phil Pio and ADV Pop.
Over on the blog and more general comments, there was lots of debate about Bonnie Prince Billy and his remarks about Bonnie Vare in Rosie's interview last week. No Depression basically managed to sum up the debate most articulately when he said, Oldham's comments about Bon Iver were a little harsh. I think Froma is a good record and Bon Iver and his band put on a great live show. While it's true that some of the press on the album has been a little precious, and Bon Iver has had a hand in that, it's probably best to ignore the public persona and focus on the music. I know my own appreciation of old Get Well Soon Rosie, and here to play us out are the Invisible with The Stain. Okay, you can post comments on this week's blog. You can tell us what you made of Whitest Boy Alive and The Invisible and all this week's tunes. The address is guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. That is it for this week. Thanks to Alex and to Tim. Get well soon, Rosie. And here to play us out are The Invisible with The Stain.
If I come looking, don't turn me away. If I come knocking, better put your fears aside. Stain that spreads across my clothes. cat's breath. Don't clean it up. Let it spread. Don't clean it up. What you say?